You're listening to Game Play on TSN 1050. We're going all in on the coverage. You can bet on it.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Game Play. I am your host, Matthew Koz. Hope you are having a good, great, somewhere in the middle Tuesday afternoon. It is a cold one. Josh Inglis is going to join us at 2:30. We will get back into a lot of betting in the NHL and, of course, with the Toronto Maple Leafs, who take on the Vegas Golden Knights tonight. And I don't know how you land on this there, producer Austin. I'm definitely leaning towards the Leafs. And the Leafs, by the way, here's the weird question. We're going to ask about it. The Leafs opened at plus 105. They were a slight underdog against Vegas. You bet $100, you win 105. Now they're at like minus 125. They've now swung to the favorite, where you got to bet 125 to win 100. What the hell happened in the course from last night to this morning?
Oh, I laid big money on the Knights at plus 105. No, I have no idea. I think that's movement of the line, exactly, because you so rarely see the Maple Leafs as an underdog that when you do get a chance to lay value on them, I think a lot of bettors laid a very heavy value on them. So now you got to kind of leverage it out to get that money back on Vegas, right? So I think that's what you're seeing there. I don't think it's a reflection. I think the opening odds was the Leafs 105, Vegas 110. So that means Vegas sees it as a, Vegas being the books here, sees it as a pretty straight on matchup. So any type of money movement you see then is going to greatly affect who they have on the money line. I do believe that the Leafs are still not favored on the puck line, though, correct?
I'd have to go back and look. I just know on the money line, I'm now seeing it at minus 125, Golden Knights at plus 105.
Wow.
So that's, a hell of a swing.
That
is a ton of money. And I guess, okay, if you want to just like talk it out, like just go the obvious reasons, is that Vegas, who've always been great on the at home, not as much. They're just three games over 500 at T-Mobile Arena. The Leafs are 8-4-2 on the road. Golden Knights have dropped three of their last four games at home. They lose to the Blackhawks on Saturday 2-1. Only the expansion Seattle Kraken have more home losses in the Pacific than Vegas. Finally, you throw in Max Pacioretty is out indefinitely after undergoing successful wrist surgery. And this guy has 12 goals and 21 points in like the 16 games he's played. There was a 9-game point streak when he first returned. We had 10 goals and 16 points in 9 games when he returned back near the end of November. Losing him from the lineup is a big one. As for the Leafs, you still don't have Marner, but you do have Andre Kasha is back. So that certainly like helps the first line. It means less minutes from guys like Cini, who I never heard of before.
Same.
And, you know, you still got two great lines with the Maple Leafs. And Mikheyev has played well. David Kampf is your third-line center. It's not the end of the world. And, then, you know, hey, Nick Ritchie scored in the last game. And you got Spezza at center. So it's not the end of the world there. Also, you've got Jack Campbell in net. And with Campbell, this is why I'm taking the under. The under, I'm seeing it at 6, at minus 114. And Campbell's save percentage has dropped. It's now like 918.
Only 918.
Yeah, exactly. By the way, a game against Colorado. No, everyone's goalie save, every goalie save percentage goes down after you play Colorado. So I like the under, and I like the Leafs on the money line. That's sort of where I'm going.
Are you getting the Leafs as the money line currently or what it opened at? Because I got the Leafs at plus 105, and anytime I get the Leafs as an underdog, I automatically jump on it.
Yeah, I didn't. Last night, my focus was on the over.
The under, yeah, fair enough.
Yeah,
no, that makes total sense. I like that bet, too, because I think also we, you know, kind of get away from the betting perspective. This is a big game for the Leafs. Like, they need to come out and have a defensively solid performance.
Exactly.
It can't be a 5-4 game in any respect. Like, I need this to be a 3-1 game for my own sanity, Matt. I really need them to just come out, have a really good performance, and just close a game down if you get into an early lead. Like, I don't see it high scoring, though. I completely agree with you in that respect. Leonard also, very good goalie. And back.
Yeah, like, you got Robert Leonard, you got Campbell. And what you got is the Maple Leafs, let's face it, often the Maple Leafs, they're a bunch of children. So now, I don't know if they got scolded behind the scenes, because publicly, Sheldon Keefe was like, nothing but positives and praise for the team after they're up 4-1 and lost to Colorado, which again, Colorado's a great team. You didn't have Mitch Marner. Hey, it's going to happen. But you always wonder, okay, it's like, okay, we got to be good for mom and dad. Everyone, eat your vegetables. I hate vegetables. I know. Eat your vegetables tonight. 4 days from now, we'll be hiding all the peas underneath the mashed potatoes. But tonight, we can't hide the vegetables. We got to eat them. That plus the great goalies plus no Pacioretty, I'm taking the under. So here's my sort of big picture question about the Maple Leafs. And shout out to The Athletic. When they start to put out like the Monday morning Leafs report by Jonas Siegel, I'll read it and then come up with, you know, sort of my own sort of questions and things. Where do the Maple Leafs stand in your mind? On the one level, let's go back and forth.
That's a great question.
The positive, they are third in points percentage. They are fourth in goal differential. Now, there's also stats about what they're doing in expected goals, and I immediately deleted that because that is never going to be a part of the show. So, Boston on one end, third in NHL points percentage, fourth in goal differential. Okay, top three, top four team. The other side, they haven't faced many of the top teams. They faced Carolina once. They lost 4-1. They've got two more against Carolina. They've yet to go up against Florida, three games against the Panthers.
Yeah.
They got Tampa twice more, three against Washington, one against Nashville, Minnesota, and Pittsburgh. So that's the other side. Well, a lot of the elite teams haven't really faced. Now, the pushback there is, whoa, Kaz. They beat Calgary and Tampa, both 2-1. They beat the Rangers 2-1. They demoed Colorado 8-3. They got a 4-0 win against Vegas. The Leafs' record versus top 11 teams, 5 wins, 4 losses, and what's the three? That's overtime losses.
Overtime losses, yeah.
So I look at that as they have played 12 games against top 11 teams. They only have 5 wins.
Yeah, I look at that as they're under 500 as well.
I look at it as under 500. I take that 3 and I add that to the 4 and I get 7. So I get 5-7. Now, the Leafs actually have a better points percentage this year at 712 than last year, where they finished 688 against the quote-unquote weak North. But big picture, you know, and we'll get the thing is, your idea of the team, it changes as the year goes on, and do your best again to ignore the playoffs. But how do you view the Leafs? Do you view them as the team that is third in the entire league in points percentage? Are you a bit suspicious of that number when you consider there's still a lot of games against a lot of elite teams they haven't played? And one final thought. Here's how it usually works. The great teams, they don't have a 750 winning percentage against other great teams. It's probably around 525, 550, 570. You know, great teams beat up on the bad teams and do just, you know, above average, over 50% against the good teams. So this is not just a Leaf thing, but I'm just throwing it out there to the audience. Where do you view this team right now?
No, it's a great question. It really is, because you also have to consider the division they're in, right? They are in the best division in the NHL,
yep.
Where finishing second means you probably have the toughest first-round matchup in the NHL, having to play one of Florida or Tampa, hypothetically. And Boston's turning it on right now, too, so they need to take every regular season game and make the most out of it, right? And you can only beat who's in front of you. But those 5 games left against the Panthers and the Lightning, I think are those like key regular season games that will tell you where this team is and who this team is going forward into the postseason. I think we all agree they're going to make the postseason. It's just The seed's going to be the most important thing. And really the defense, the Muzzin at the end, but we don't have to talk about that. But I do view them as an upper echelon team in the NHL, and that's why I get so disappointed when they blow leads. Like, upper echelon teams don't do that.
Ah, but they do. They do. Colorado over the last 15 years.
But Colorado's the same problem the Leafs have. Their defense isn't fantastic, and their goaltending suspect at best, right? So
I'd say the Leafs are better goaltending.
The Leafs have much better goaltending than Colorado. Yeah, Jack Campbell's way better than Darcy Kemper, but I mean, going forward. So Colorado's not a team where I look at them in the postseason, I'm thinking that's someone I'm scared of. No, it's Tampa. It's Boston. It's the Vegas Golden Knights, for lack of a... They have been successful. Colorado doesn't have that success in the postseason. It's a lot of the same story as the Leafs.
The single scariest person in the entire NHL, if you want to do it in terms of what happens once the postseason starts, that's easy. That's Andrei Vasilevsky. Go look at Tampa's record. Go look at Tampa's record against the spread. Go look at goals against when Vasilevsky's playing versus not. I mean, it's a massive split. So to me, Vasilevsky's the single most is the single biggest factor when the postseason begins. Regular season, there's ways around it and back to backs and stuff like that. But come the postseason, that one's going to be different. Let's hear from the coach. Let's hear from Sheldon Keefe, because we know that it looks like Mitch Marner and Pierre Engvall are not going to play tonight, still on COVID protocol. Andre Kasha is back. And the key word here, listen to Sheldon Keefe's quote, and the key word, you're going to hear it in the first seven words.
Certainly when he's in the lineup for us, we're a much deeper team in all regards. Another guy that we trust playing against anybody. And that can play on any line, plays on the power play and the penalty kill, plays late in games, you know, all those things. It makes a big difference to our team when he's in there. And certainly when we've played without him, you know, we felt his absence. And then you couple that with missing Marner and Engvall, and, and Marner specifically as a right winger, those are big holes to fill. But you're always looking for guys to step up in those situations. I look at Cash as a guy who did exactly that when Marner was out, you know, prior to Christmas, and he was outstanding there.
And by the way, I miscounted. It was more than 7 to 10 words. It was a couple sentences. But the key word there is trust. Someone that we trust. And that, I mean, there's always the little key words I'm looking for when I'm hearing a coach. And when the coach trusts a guy, I mean, playing on the power play, playing on the penalty kill, playing with the fatted calf that is Austin Matthews, the most important player next to Jack Campbell, having Kasha back, I think, is important, which, again, is why I like the Leafs tonight, and I'm going to take the under. The kids are going to be responsible.
Oh, yeah, Matt, just one other thing on that quote. He said the word depth.
Yeah.
Now, and this winger has just been released. This has kind of been going around the station a little bit. I want to get your thoughts on it. What happens if the Leafs brought in Evander Kane on a league minimum deal? Would you be for that, or is it just too much at this point? He's a talented player. He's a very only John Tavares, and I think it was Huberto, have scored more goals than he has in his draft class.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No.
Okay.
No. I don't want it there. I want stability. I want calm. And also, okay. So here's the hypocritical side of me. I don't want him, but if Evander Kane, however talented you think he is as a forward, if he was a defenseman with that level of talent, then I'm like, well, you know, Spezza, leadership, Tavares, Wayne Simmons, there's lots of veteran guys on this team. They'll take him under his wing, and we can turn him around. If Evander Kane was a defenseman, I'd probably go, you know what, let's give it a shot. But as he's a forward, it allows me to play the moral high horse card and say I don't want him on the team. How's that?
Yeah, I love that. That's perfect. I think I go with the same one. So we'll see if the Leafs get D'Angelo or not.
Yeah. All right, on the other side, let's get into some prop bets with the NFL coaching talk. And Bruce Arians says it would be a travesty if Brady doesn't win the MVP. That's coming up in a moment right here on Gameplay. Welcome back, everybody. This is Gameplay. I'm your host, Matthew Cause. We were telling you earlier about the story where the Golden State Warriors wanted Draymond Green to start in that game on Sunday with the return of Klay Thompson, and they had a prearranged deal between them and the Cavs where Draymond, not ready to come back because of a calf injury, came in, was on the court for the opening tip-off, ceremonial moment. He then fouled a player on Cleveland, went to the bench, never came back again. And the betting market found out about this happening, and before some of the prop bets for Draymond Green were pulled, everyone started betting the under, and then everyone started wondering, would this ticket be honored? And we've got an update. Austin, it was DraftKings had still yet to decide whether or not they were going to pay everyone that was able to sneak in that under player prop bet on Draymond Green, who finished with 0 points, zero assists, zero rebounds, zero steals, zero blocks. You get it. And what is the latest? What's DraftKings doing?
Yeah, this is the latest from DraftKings Twitter account officially. DraftKings will be grading all of Draymond Green's under markets as winners and issuing cash refunds for all bets on Draymond Green over markets. So following suit with FanDuel and BetMGM there. Good for good for DraftKings day late dollar short.
Yep. Yeah. No. No. But in the end, they did it, and that is the right move because these casinos, these books, in the like that's the purpose of this show. We're trying to help you to win 55% of the time or something like that. Everything is in the margins. So in moments like this, it's much better for them to just to give in and give back to the community. The NFL. They got their odds out there, and I love this one you sent me, that Brandon Staley from the Chargers was the favorite to win NFL Coach of the Year in October. And then from that point on, the Chargers went 2-3 against the opponents that failed to make the playoffs. They lost to the Vikings with Kirk Cousins, the Broncos with Teddy Bridgewater, and the Houston Texans with rookie Davis Mills. Once again, Brandon Staley, let's stay here for a quick second. Mike Tomlin and Sean Payton, in some ways, those are the two coaches, and Sean Payton especially, not getting nearly enough attention, need to be praised for the job they did, getting those teams to have winning records with those quarterbacks. What the hell is Brandon Staley's excuse? They didn't have any more crazy COVID situation than other teams. In fact, they had it better off. Imagine being a Cleveland Browns fan. There's a lot of teams that had it worse off. Let's hear from Jimmy Johnson, the Hall of Fame head coach back in the day, the Dallas Cowboys, talking about just the idea of going for it on fourth down.
You've got to take into consideration how good your team is, how good they are at stopping the run, how good they are on short yardage, the weather, on and on. And you got to look at risk and reward. On your own 18, the reward might be, hey, you might make another first down, you might get a little bit better field position, but you're probably not going to score.
That's right.
The risk, if you don't make it, they're going to score. You know, and so you got to look at risk and reward on any decision like this.
I wonder how the analytics community is feeling, because this always leads to social media fights about it. But the analytics community, they got to take an L on this. And by the way, I love going for it on fourth down. I love it. I'm sometimes pro, I'm sometimes anti-analytics. Expected goals and shifts in baseball, I hate you all. You can all go straight to hell. In other cases, going for a fourth down, no short field goals, no punting, hooray! But what Brandon Staley did in that Sunday nighter was absolutely abysmal. We got Mike Lombardi, he's going to be joining the show in the 3 o'clock hour, former executive with the Patriots and now doing great stuff with VEASAN. He'll be joining us. But yeah, you can feel this, can't you, Austin? Everyone is ganging up. Rightfully so, on Brandon Staley.
You know what? I don't think people are enough, because I was shocked by that. He was a number one for Coach of the Year in October, and then they completely capitulated going 2-3. And then I think back to that Thursday nighter against the Chiefs. He left 9 points on the field for a game that went to overtime. If you just kick a field goal there, they needed one win to go to the playoffs. I think a bigger deal should be being made about it. It was such a terrible job on his part, for lack of a better term, but I guess we're playing the results, right? That is what someone like Ben Baldwin would say. So I don't I don't like the process of it.
In the moment, there was a ton of people going, what the hell are you doing?
Yeah, exactly.
Are you doing?
The only fourth down they missed in that game was the one where he runs it right into the line of scrimmage on their own 18. So it's just, I think a bigger deal is you made of what a horrible job he did. But he's a young coach. It's a young team. I think people are thinking better things in the future for them.
We'll see. Hey, let's just do the spin the wheel of sound. Give me Bruce Arians, head coach of Tampa Bay, saying if Brady doesn't get the MVP, it's a travesty.
If he doesn't get it, it's a travesty. I mean, most completions ever, 5,000 yards, touchdowns, the whole 9 yards. I mean, to me, it's not even a close race.
So Tampa and Green Bay both finished with identical records, 13-4. But Aaron Rodgers was not involved really in the loss against the Lions. He was only playing for a half and wasn't there because of COVID. He was out that game against the Chiefs and Jordan Love. But Brady has 5,300 yards. Like, Aaron Rodgers has more wins. Brady has got 5,300 yards. Aaron Rodgers, 4,100. Like, there's a 1,200-yard difference in terms of yards. Aaron Rodgers played in 16 games, really, 15 and a half, whatever. Tom Brady played in all 17. Brady, 43 touchdowns. Aaron Rodgers, 37. And I know Aaron Rodgers had far fewer interceptions, but if you go back and watch,
I know
he's got 4 interceptions. Brady's got 12, but a bunch of those 12 interceptions, end of half, end of game Hail Marys, a couple deflected passes.
I mean, 3 of Aaron Rodgers' interceptions came in one game, you know, in his defense then, if we want to do it that way, right? So it's just the turnovers for me that separate them. Yeah, Aaron Rodgers just doesn't turn the ball over, and all the other candidates were double digits in interceptions this year.
I mean, Brady had more weapons. Aaron Rodgers
had a better defense, I think, right?
I think the defense pretty even. Okay. I'd have to go back and look at the numbers. Tampa had a ton of injuries, and so did Green Bay. Aaron Rodgers had better running backs.
Yeah, certainly.
We can agree there. And then really,
Devontae Adams is better than Mike Evans and I forgot the guy who tore his ACL, sorry.
But Godwin.
Chris Godwin, better than Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, Antonio Brown, and Gronkowski, right? But then the next tier, it's all the Tampa Bay guys. So it's an even one. It's just the interceptions for me. It really is the difference maker.
And the other one, though, the NFC South is still better than the NFC North.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
The Saints were 9-8. The Vikings were 8-9. Third place, Bears, 6-11. Atlanta, 7-10. Fourth place, Carolina at 5-12. That's horrible. But last place in the North was the Detroit Lions at 3-13.
Problem is, though, Tom Brady lost to the Saints twice.
He did. By the way, okay, let me ask you this question. Let's say that that Tampa loses 9-0 to the Saints in week one.
Like Aaron Rodgers, right?
Yeah, or week two. Where are we in the MVP race?
Oh, I think that changes it completely. I think
location. And I'm only saying this because Aaron Rodgers, the odds of him winning the MVP are so much higher than Tom Brady. I don't think the division should be that much. It's only thought.
And even if the Aaron Rodgers COVID thing happened the last 3 weeks instead of 6 weeks ago, you know, I think we'd have a different race. But like you're saying, location.
It's not just for real estate agents. All right, Josh Inglis is going to join us, betting expert. We're going to get back into the Toronto Maple Leafs, his thoughts on that game, and what the hell is doing with that line. It's moving all over the place. That's coming up next right here on Gameplay. Welcome back, everybody. This is Gameplay. I'm your host, Matthew Cause. The NFL isn't the only league that you see lines jumping all over the place. It happens in every league. But with the Leafs-Vegas game, a game you can listen to right here on TSN 1050, again, the pregame at 9:30, puck drop at 10 o'clock. Good luck to my brothers in the morning show, being able to stay awake for that game. The line has moved quite a bit. And joining me now, who covers all things betting, whether it's NFL, NHL, or baseball for Covers.com, it is Josh Inglis. Josh, thanks so much for joining the show today.
Matthew Cause, thanks for having me on. The last time we were talking, you were relegated to your duties inside in quarantine. So I just want to know, the real question is, did you learn any dirty secrets about your neighbors?
Let's see. The neighbors to my right are doing massive renovations to the point where I had to go somewhere else to do yesterday's show because the drilling was too loud. So that's the main thing that I've really, because I know most of the secrets. I know who, the ones who party. I know the ones who get drunk. Actually, that's most of them is me. But yeah, my neighbors to the right, they're doing some serious renos.
Oh, well, I'm sorry to hear that. It's probably better than, probably not as good, actually, as my neighbor blasting Hypnotize right now, but we do with what we can.
Yeah, well, hey, here's the rule. As long as there's no meth lab, you're doing well. That's advice from my grandfather before he passed away. Very odd, specific final words. So, Josh, the Maple Leafs, yesterday I see them at plus 105 in their game tonight in Vegas. Now I see them at minus 125. There hasn't been new players put in COVID protocols. There haven't been backup goalies who have been announced as the starters. Do you have any idea what the hell's going on?
Short answer, no. I really don't. I was writing the article this morning, my preview, and it was plus 105. And by the time I went to go publish it, it was minus 125, which indicates that there was probably some big news coming out. This is the line movement there is probably a little bigger than maybe just smart money moving that line. So there I am messaging David Alter, who covers the Leafs, messaging him while he's in Vegas. I'm like, you know anything about what's going on here? He's like, we're just getting up in Vegas, so please leave me alone. But no, like, I thought it'd be a Leonard thing. I thought because Alex Martinez just got put on COVID, so I thought something would be coming off of that. But no, nothing really seems to be there right now. I mean, the Knights are just finishing up their skate, I think, right now, so we could learn a bit more after a brief after that. But as of now, it just looks like solid live movement to the Leafs, and I like it. I do like the Leafs. Going into that game versus Colorado, that was such a good spot for Colorado. I mean, they spotted them three early, but look what happened with Toronto. I mean, their lines were in a blender, first off. That was the worst part of that. The second line was just awful with Mikhaev, Tavares, and Nylander. Thank God they'll be back together with Kerfoot tonight. But the lines were in a blender. This was the first actual real road trip that this team's taken. They've been pampered literally being at home for so long and their road trips being so short with just Minnesota and Edmonton for one game. So they had that going for them. And let's not forget, Colorado is by far the hands-down best team in hockey. They're plus 145 to win everything right now, which is quite a bit of difference from Florida sitting at plus 700. So the tier is huge. And this is a team even without good goaltending. So if they ever get that, like, this could be one of the best teams maybe since Detroit. I mean, and that's saying a lot with how good Tampa Bay's been.
Or yeah. Oh, God, yeah. By the way, okay, off topic for a quick second. If you can pick one player, and this is only for what happens in the postseason, is there any player that moves the needle in the NHL playoffs, like the health of Andre Vasilevsky, when you look at what Tampa they are against the spread with and without Vasilevsky?
No, it's insane. Like, I won 10-1 bets last year just betting every elimination game that he would get a shutout. I won it twice. He had three shutouts in elimination games. I think he lost two of them, but in three games he won, there were shutouts. He just steals everything. Like, I'll put Jack Campbell as the number two goalie in this league right now. But I think the division between them is just as big as the division versus Colorado and the rest of the league. He's the best there is right now. He's even better at home. His experience in the playoffs is second to none. So that's the road definitely goes through him this year again.
Going back to the Leafs line move, my first thought was, is there going to be a mysterious return of Mitch Marner? And, you know, is there anything there? Like, and we have no idea. We're still kind of waiting. And the Alex Martinez being out for Vegas, that's not enough to move the line. Like, how significant for people that are just getting into betting, and you hear numbers, but sometimes it needs to be put into context. For the line to move from the Leafs were at plus 105 to minus 125, how big of a move is that?
The move is significant, but the speed in which it moves is just as significant. When we see good money, sharp money, smart money come in on a bet, especially in hockey, we see the line move, the price of the money line move in increments of 5, maybe in increments of 10, but we don't see it move at 20 points. So right. A good rule of thumb when we're looking at hockey here, we do about 20 points for home ice advantage. So the difference between going home and away is 40 points, right? So this line movement of, what, 35 points would be, Marner wouldn't move this 35 points. Marner, you might give 10 points at the most. A goalie situation, that's where I was. I thought maybe because Laurent Brossoit was questionable in the other game, so his availability for tonight is still questionable. So if Robin Leonard was out tonight, which he still might could be, because he was dealing with that upper body injury and he's only played two games since returning, then going to the backup here, which I think is Logan Thompson, that would move the line significantly. And that's what I was looking for. But so far, that hasn't come to fruition. So I really don't have an idea of why this line is moving. And I don't know. If they came into the backup goaltending right now, that would make a lot more sense.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Well, for me, again, talking about Josh English from covers.com, and, you know, covers, you know, hockey and baseball and football, but certainly with a line on the Toronto Maple Leafs. I like the Leafs even at minus 125. I like it more at plus 105, whatever. And I think I'm going to take the under just because no Max Pacioretty. That hurts the offense for Vegas. And also after what the Leafs did in the third period against Colorado, I expect everyone to be on their best behavior.
That's a really good point. How well they bounced back from that game. But you're looking at the previous matchup, that was a Toronto 4-0 win. I think they closed at minus 200 on the money line. There was no Pacioretty. There was no Stone. There was no William Karlsson. They were missing a lot of players in that situation, too. And I know you were talking about the Leafs not beating good teams. That was one of the teams they beat, and they were shorthanded. Vegas was shorthanded. And the 8-3 beating versus Colorado was versus Jonas Johansson in net, too. So
Yep. They've
even beaten fewer good teams with good goaltend.
Okay,
yeah, so going back to this Toronto price, I'm on Toronto here. I really like the fact that Cash is jumping up on this top line right now, which allows Kerfoot back to the second line. And now we can have Tavares, Nylander, and Kerfoot back together. I mean, the bottom six are still up in the air as who's playing where. Comp's playing with Simmons, and I think Richie's been put on the fourth line. So this will be another really top two-line heavy approach, hopefully, from Toronto. And Kerfoot back on the second line with Tavares and Nylander is big after they pulled a dud the other day. So I am on Toronto here. I am on Toronto team total over 3. If you can't get the 3.5 is available, plus 120. This Las Vegas team is not good defensively or even in net. Their bottom third pairing, they've had so many defensemen go in and out of the lineup. They have a very weak bottom third right now on the defense. And out of all the top 5 or the top 15 teams in point percentage, Las Vegas has the second worst goals against, right behind Minnesota. So this team isn't winning close games. And they're just coming off that game versus Flower, which was probably a big game for both teams. And that was a game that Marc-Andre Fleury won 2-1, basically. So there's a little letdown coming off that game. Toronto coming back big after a terrible third period. And as you heard in your clip earlier with Spezza talking about learning from it, and it seems like every time the Leafs get beat down pretty good, Father Keefe is there to say nice things in their losses, but always hard on them in their wins. So I don't think they'll be feeling too bad. They'll finish this up. This road trip continues. Love the Leafs money line today. We probably won't see it at this price until April, till their later games versus like Tampa Bay or Florida.
Let's go there. And so you like the team total for the Leafs and Leafs on the money line for tonight's game. So big picture, where do the Leafs stand? And I talked about it before, you might have heard it, so I'll say it real super duper quick. Third in the NHL in points percentage, fourth in goal differential. That's fantastic. Yet they have, you know, they've got to face Carolina 2 more times. They lost to Carolina earlier this year. They've yet to play Florida. They got Tampa twice, Washington 3 times, Nashville, Minnesota, and Pittsburgh once each. So it's like they've got a great points percentage, but they've avoided a lot of the great teams, and their record against the top 11 teams is 5 wins, 7 losses. And as you mentioned, that win against Vegas, that was an undermanned team. That win against Colorado, that was against even worse goaltending than they have now. How do you view them big picture?
Big picture in the East, it's so difficult to figure out what's going to happen. I mean, you probably have to give the edge to Tampa Bay just because of experience. Obviously, coming back-to-back. But then you could also get into the point that maybe they've played too much hockey over the time. How well can Vasilevsky hold up? Is Nikita Kucherov going to be there for the whole stretch going into the playoffs, or are they going to have to bury him again? And then you have teams like the Pittsburgh Penguins, who have quietly been like the 5th best team in hockey since the beginning of November. There are so many good teams in the East. It's going to be a coin flip. It's going to come down to who's healthy at the right time. I think on any given day, any of those teams can beat each other. So at this point, as a bettor, it's probably just trying to find out who has the highest odds and maybe just taking some shots at those teams. That's why maybe I don't love getting in on the Leafs outrights right now where they
sit. No.
Yeah, I bought some shares of the Pittsburgh Penguins last weekend. I don't know. It's such a hypothetical, and I'm sure that's why you brought it up, Matthew, but there is real no way to judge it right now. As we see Florida and Tampa Bay going back and forth, we don't see an edge between those two teams. Whoever comes out of the East is probably going to be so beaten up. It could just be a cakewalk for Colorado in the finals.
It's just so annoying. And by the way, this happens in all sports. In the NBA, being in the West, you know, for so long, and we see it now in the NHL. Leafs in any other, at least from the West, and they would be one of the more favorites to get through it all. And so, yes, Josh, I agree with you. Be very careful betting on Eastern team futures because it is a coin flip. Maybe avoid the Leafs, big picture, but bet them tonight. Follow the man on Twitter, @covers_Josh. Read his work at covers.com. Josh, good luck with the game tonight. Fascinating one. Always appreciate when you join the show.
I appreciate it, Matthew. Thanks, Austin. Andre Kasha, anytime goal prop, sitting at +350 right now, too. He'll be on the top line with Matthews. And Matthews to score two, sitting at +600. So, I don't know. Ooh. I think there's a ton of value in Kasha right now.
Okay, Kasha and the Matthews one. Yeah, Kasha is back, and he's listen, you're on a line with Matthews. You're going to get open opportunities. It's a good bet. Thank you, sir.
All right, guys. You guys take care. Thanks.
You as well. That is Josh Inglis from covers.com. All right, on the other side, I need to play this sound from Ryan Clark, former NFL safety, who just goes to town on the New York Giants. And will Evander Kane play again? TSN's Pierre LeBrun and the crew weigh in. That's coming up in a moment right here on Gameplay. Welcome back, everybody. This is Gameplay. The Miami Dolphins next head coach odds. It's Jim Harbaugh at +200. But, Austin, let's play the other sound from the 81-year-old owner of the Miami Dolphins. And the only reason I mention his age is because what you'll often find is the older you get as an owner, especially if your team isn't one, your decision-making can change. It can be about, let's do something quick and now. Let's go for the quick fix, because let's face it, TikTok. And here's Stephen Rosso saying he's got no interest in Jim Harbaugh.
I love Jim Harbaugh. I had the opportunity once before to come to the Miami Dolphins, but he's at the University of Michigan. As everybody really knows, and I guess that's really, that is my school I graduated from, and I'm very involved in it. And I'm not going to be the person that takes Jim Harbaugh to the University of Michigan. I hope he stays there. He is a great coach.
Why fire Brian Flores and side with a general manager who has not really done much in the positive for the Miami Dolphins? Like, if you're going to do that, if you're going to get rid of Brian Flores, then it feels to me you've got to make, like, this super splash. And I just, I see Brian Leftwich at +400. Here's my question for you. I've seen Brian Daboll for the Bears head coach at +1100.
Yeah.
Where's Eric Bieniemy? Yeah. Where is his name in all this?
No, it's a great question. I have no idea. And he must be just a horrible interviewer or something, but he's not been on any of these lists. I think he was rumored for the Vikings. Which didn't have odds as of speaking right now.
Because it, like, if you look at, I know that he hasn't had as good a year this year, but Patrick Mahomes, the last 10 games, 19 touchdowns against just 4 interceptions. And the offense is still nearly as good as what it was last year and the year before that. Feels to me Eric Bieniemy's name should be seen and heard more than what we have so far. Spinning the wheel sound, let's stick with the NFL. Former safety of the Pittsburgh Steelers, Ryan Clark, going off on Joe Judge and the New York Giants.
It's absolutely a despicable display of football every time you watch this team play. They have a coach who's like, you know what? Everybody believes. People have faith. That's the hardest thing to do. You know why he says that? Because he can't win a freaking football game. He wants to come out, be Timmy Tough Nuts. Look at my small chin. Watch how tough I can be in the post-game press conference. How about you be tough during the game and actually stop somebody? How about you be tough during the game and actually score some freaking points? I'm so tired of Joe Judge. And listen, I wouldn't hate the Giants so much, if I didn't hate Joe Judge so much, if he didn't always walk up like he was all swole and he was all big and bad all the damn time and lose every freaking game, I wouldn't even be upset. If he was humble, right? If he wasn't arrogant, if he didn't act like he was Bill Belichick, you know what he is? Bill Belichick your ass out of the stadium because he's sorry as hell.
Oh, my God.
Tell us how you really feel, Ryan Clark.
Oh, my God. That, like, I mean, that, first off, that just sounds like such the, you know, the player. Because you know what he doesn't do? He doesn't put any of the blame on what's going on with the Giants on the players. And by the way, I want Joe Judge fired. The main problem with the Giants has been their general manager. But, damn, that is about as strong as you will hear. I wonder if the NFL will send a quick little note to was that from the morning show on ESPN? Was
yeah,
that,
first like, up, first up on that ESPN.
Was that okay? Because I wonder if there's going to be a little message going, tell your talent to not be that vocal, because Ryan Clark, especially despicable. And by the way, it's not that he's wrong; he's not.
Well, he's going after the way he walks, his whole demeanor, more as a person, yeah, as a football coach, right? Like that was an absolute assassination by Ryan Clark.
Let's go to Dominic Foxworth, former cornerback, talking about all things Dak Prescott.
Look out for a crash on the on-ramp from northbound Islington to the eastbound Gardner.
Nope, that's that was Dominic Foxworth talking.
Well, I'll let you
talking.
Know when I became Dak Prescott's cousin. I was one in his rookie year who said they should bring back Tony Romo for that playoff game. Then I watched that playoff game, and I saw Dak Prescott put up 17 fourth-quarter points. And then I watched the following season how Dak Prescott played, and I was a believer from that point on. Then I was in the front of the bandwagon and watching everybody else jump on late. And this playoff thing is going to be another situation like that. Dak has been one of the best playoff-performing quarterbacks with a 75 QBR in three games, and he's led game-winning drives in the playoffs. So I'm going to be happy to be at the front of this train. I'm pleased to be the conductor of the Dak Prescott is an awesome playoff quarterback train. I'll make some room for you guys to hop on later on. We got plenty of seats, baby. Get on this train. It's going to take us all the way to the championship game at least. So,
I'm going to settle down.
Greeny,
And also, Dak Prescott, if you heard in that earlier clip, also giving you updates on what's going on in the 401. If there's any man with his eye on Morningside, it's Dominic Foxworth. But here's my question with the Dallas offense. Is it, like, when I say, is it legit, that question sounds stupid. They're number one in yardage, number one in points scored. They're ninth in offensive efficiency. DVOA, the Pro Football Focus, or the Football Outsiders, excuse me, when they look at, you know, when they do adjusted numbers, Dallas Cowboys, you know, got a pretty high offense as well. The other side, though, is the Cowboys averaged the third most offensive points per game at 30.8 in weeks 1 through 6. But then Dak Prescott gets injured. From weeks 9 through 17, we don't include the last week, that game against Philly when no one was playing, they were 13th. So their offense went from third best to 13th. That's sort of the question you have, and it's kind of been a little bit up and down late in the year. It's weird. The Dallas offense, we've seen it blow people out, and then we've seen them go through weeks where they looked kind of not bad, never bad, but league average.
Bad though sometimes. Like that, I go back to the game against Arizona, right? And they just couldn't get anything going in that game. And then against Philadelphia, they look, obviously Philadelphia is not playing a lot of their starters, but they look completely unstoppable from the word go in that game. So I think inconsistency is the best word, but I don't have questions about the defense. I trust that defense completely. My whole question with the Cowboys is whether or not they're... Oh, sorry, did I say defense? I meant offense. I have no questions with the offense. It's the defense that gives me questions. That's where... Can they stop the 49ers running attack? That's the big thing.
They're... Okay, well, they are 23rd in rush defense.
Yeah.
They're giving up 4.5 yards per carry. And then the other question... The only question I have with Dallas's defense... I mean, there's that. Also, what happens if they don't get turnovers?
Yeah, exactly.
Now, you know, we know this, that Dallas, they're you know, they have an NFL high 26 interceptions on the season. Going into week 17, tied for the league with 33 takeaways, and they had one against Philly. But what happens if they don't get any? Just, yeah, something to consider there. And we'll do a lot more of that a little bit later in the week, just looking at the wild card. We're out of time, aren't we? We're out of time for...
We just maybe set it up for Dave King here to talk some Phoenix Suns basketball.
That is, yeah, coming up on the other side. The number one team in the NBA, to me, is the Phoenix Suns. And we'll get into all things Phoenix. Is this team better than the one that went to a Game 6 of the NBA Finals last year? That is, because that game is coming up tonight, Raptors-Suns. That's coming up. But first, you already got a bit of a tease, but here it is, the News Talk 1010 Traffic Update.